Hello again, everyone, and welcome to Enterprise Linux Security. We are up to episode 7, which is technically 8 because we started at 0. But, you know, we're going to call this episode 7 because 0 was episode 0. So I'm here with Zhao, as usual, and I'm also here with Jack. How you doing?
Hey, Jay. Hey, Joao. How are you?
Hey, Jack.
Doing pretty good.
Hey, everybody.
So a common thread on this podcast is distribution migrations and how difficult they are, how it impacts security. Because if you're staying on legacy software, I mean, that's a real security issue. And at some point you won't get any security updates. But even then, I'm not sure that the quality of the security updates when a distribution gets super old anyway is going to be all that great. But at the same time, companies out there, they stay on distributions for a very long time, probably a lot longer than they should. And I think part of the reason for that is that it's a really challenging thing to do. It's almost like trying to pull a tablecloth from the table without disrupting the dishes on top. And you're just hoping nothing breaks, but often something does. And it's just a chaotic experience. And Jack is here to talk about Elevate, which is going to take some of these rough edges, actually probably all the rough edges, depending on what you're migrating to, because it's a tool that aims to make this actually not a horrible process.
Yes, correct. Yeah, it's trying to make this as painless as possible. Not to say that it's totally painless, but it's trying to make the process a lot more sane than what was possible before.
Yeah, and there's so many distribution differences. I mean, run levels can be different. Package names are almost always different. You have some that are capital, some that are lowercase, some that require libraries that are split, and then, you know, maybe on another distribution there's not as many, or maybe some are combined. Yeah. And the problem here is that it's just so hard to move. And I need to kind of give a disclaimer here. I don't care how great the tool is out there or whatever the tool is. You have to back up. You have to take snapshots before you start this. The last thing you want to do is just migrate a distro, you know, without a backup. I feel like I shouldn't have to tell anyone that, but it goes without saying. You know, things can happen, but once you have a snapshot of your server and you've tested your backup and it's time to migrate, then what I think Jack is going to propose with Elevate might just be up someone's alley out there.
Yeah. And listen, I think it goes without saying that we still need to remind everyone to make sure you back up and take snapshots, you know, system changes, system-wide changes, OS
and test
tinkering,
them.
Let's say, is, you know, not for the faint of heart. Let's put it that way. This certainly makes it a lot easier, but I mean, you know, let's use best practices, you know. I mean, it's almost Halloween. We don't want any more horror stories. Let's make sure that you know, everyone out there, make sure that you're following best practices, you know. Back your stuff up. Yeah. Let's do this the right way. You'll have a great procedure, and it'll be a great experience when you actually see your system migrated. But, you know, let's be smart about this.
Yeah. Yep. We actually have a running gag here on the podcast about not calling it best practices and just calling it whatever actually fits your workload and
the best for you.
We try to avoid best practices because best practices imply that it applies everywhere, the same for everyone. There are always differences on your infrastructure from somebody else's and what fits one might not fit exactly the other one, and then you're left wondering why the hell didn't this work as intended.
I think one of the reasons. Oh, I'm sorry.
Let me just finish this. Totally do the backups and test the backups. The worst thing that you want to do is think that you have your backup ready to go in case of problem, having a problem, and then oops, the backup doesn't restore for some weird reason or another. Do test it. That's part of the backup procedure.
Right. I think just for some context around the best practices thing for anyone that hasn't heard us talk about it before, there seems to be this confusion in the industry. And I think it's because, you know, not everybody at a company is a technical wizard. You have your IT staff and you have other people in your company. And best practice seems to imply that it is the best thing to do. But the problem is, when a company hires a security auditor or something like that, and they seem to have this incorrect notion that this amazing person that they're hiring can make them hack-proof. And then, you know, they get audited and all these things. And then what ends up happening is they, you know, something bad happens and they get upset at the person that's responsible for security. But I think part of that is we call it a best practice, as if that implies that if you do these things, then you'll be fine. There's no worries. There's no security problems. But I think the message we really want to get out there is that security is like an onion. There's different layers. And
absolutely.
That's the thing. So I don't know if we have a tried and true term to use instead of best practice. Yeah. Maybe somebody could write in and let us know what we should use instead. But I just want to try to change that. And getting back onto the point, though, so we have Elevate from Alma Linux. And even though it's from Alma Linux, it's not specific to Alma Linux, which I think is probably the cool thing about it. But before we get into that, we should give everyone an elevator pitch of what Elevate intends to do. What's the goal that it wants to solve?
Yeah, so Elevate is a project which lets you elevate your distro. And by elevate, the EL are both capital there, implying this is for the Enterprise Linux family of distributions. So that is Red Hat Enterprise Linux derivatives. So that's, you know, that's what we're talking about here. And then the project itself is comprised of a couple of pieces. So the first piece is the tool which is used to do the migrations. And that is actually based on a tool and framework that Red Hat has, that they were the initial developers on. They're still the primary developers on it. And that's called Leap. And what Leap lets you do is do similar in-place migrations, but for Red Hat Enterprise Linux. And now another part of that is that those upgrades require certain metadata, which Red Hat provides under a subscription license. So it's not something that's, the tool itself is open source. The metadata is not open source. And what that lets you do is, so like you were mentioning before, Jay, basically between different distributions, there's a list of primitives that can apply to kind of the life of a package. So between two distributions, a package could have been removed. It could have been added. It could have been split. And a bunch of other things that can take place there. So what this metadata does is it basically describes the evolution of a package between the different distributions. So I can say that in, you know, CentOS 7, whatever package existed, and then when I want to go from 7 to 8, that package no longer exists. And then I need to define how that's going to be handled. So the first part of Elevate is the tool. And the second part is something really cool, which we put together, which is called the Package Evolution Service. And what the Package Evolution Service lets you do is it lets anyone, whether that be a maintainer, whether that be, you know, just someone doing a migration, whether that's an application vendor, anyone can contribute metadata about any package to this library via the Package Evolution Service. So we've basically rebuilt like a core functionality data set that's available. And then this is going to be dynamic because it can always be added to, it can always be enhanced thanks to contributions from people in the community, which is what this is all about. And then what we actually had to do was then we had to go back and submit patches to Leap in order to make it feasible and workable on other distributions. So the core Leap tool was only for Red Hat Enterprise Linux. We added support for CentOS there. And then, of course, the ability to go from there to other distributions. So at the initial thinking of Red Hat was, you know, go from RHEL whatever version to the next version. And so we kind of opened up the door a little bit to make it go from CentOS to whatever other, you know, enterprise Linux variant you want to go to.
And just to emphasize a point that may be lost on someone that's new to this, until a few versions ago, even the standard policy around CentOS when you wanted to upgrade from one version to the next was to do a complete wipe and reinstall and then get back everything reconfigured and get all the data back into the system. So there wasn't an easy upgrade tool or some process to move from one version to another other than a complete reinstallation. And that's a blocker. That's a huge blocker if you have a fleet of thousands of servers and you have to prepare that and you have to wipe them and reinstall them. And where are you going to put the data in the meantime? And how are you going to store all the configurations and get everything back together and make sure that nothing broke in the process, because you're the one doing it, so no one is going to ensure that for you. So you'll have to manually go and check if all the systems are coming back up again and all the services are up and working and there's no incompatibility somewhere. So a tool that automates this process, this is really, really good.
It really is. It's just amazing that this is even possible, because I've always seen a distribution migration to be a challenge. I mean, even going from, you know, version X to version Y of the same distro to the same distro can be a challenge. Yes. But then when you're going from, you know, even though they're Red Hat based or Red Hat family, enterprise family distributions, going from one different member of that family to another member of that family is also really, really hard. And it's one of those things I think most people just don't even try to tackle. They're like, yeah, that's too much. I'm just going to wipe it and reload it. That doesn't mean that it's not possible to do this. And obviously, since Elevate exists, it's definitely possible. But that's not the mindset that the majority of the people have, because of how they've been, you know, in the trenches fighting this war, and, you know, they're kind of hardened about this, and they're seasoned to do it a certain kind of way. They don't think, oh, is there a better way to do this? There probably is, but I have like a bunch of these servers to manage and I don't really have time to develop that way. Yeah. And now the community is taking control.
And that's actually, just a second, Jack, sorry. That's actually a very good point, because at some point in the past couple of years or 5 years or 10 years or something like that, people started looking at servers like they are disposable. Right. We started having containers and Kubernetes and the cloud. So server is not that thing that you tweak to perfection and that you just install another package and get everything ready. Now you just fire one up. If it's no longer useful, you take it down, you wipe it, you fire up a new version. This lets you actually look at things in a different context, in a different light. You can actually have a longer expected lifetime for your servers. You don't have to look at them like cattle. You can actually start to look at them again as actual useful individual servers. And having had that experience in the past and having worked for quite a while as a sysadmin and having the experience of individual servers and actually caring for them, if that's even possible, I find it very interesting that there is now a possibility and an avenue to actually go back and look at servers again like that.
Yeah, I think that's a very good point too. You know, a lot these days has become sort of disposable, and I'm guilty of it too. But you know, depending on how you provision your applications, This allows you to do a lot that, you know, previously you would just kind of throw everything away. And now it makes it a little bit more permanent. Let's put it that way.
And don't get me wrong. There's a place for both approaches, and there are places where it's useful to actually recycle servers like that.
Absolutely.
But for other situations when you were just shoehorning a solution like a container or something for a complex stack of software or something like that, that you couldn't properly do in a containerized way or in a disposable way, this brings up a lot of other options to the table. You can now prepare one in a version and know that you can carry it on forward towards other versions if you have to.
Another thing too, to kind of piggyback off of the cattle reference. I agree. Absolutely. Containers helped propagate that mentality. But another one is AWS, Amazon Web Services, is another company that kind of made this the thing, because I was actually taken aback by this when I first started with AWS, which I think was 2016 or something, somewhere around there, where the best practice is exactly that. Think of your servers like cattle. And then to add insult to injury, you know, you have a server, it's configured, everything's fine. You get this email from them that says your server has, or no, we've encountered a hardware issue. We're going to be deleting your server in a week. Oh, what? You're going to be deleting? Don't do that. Now, of course, the solution for anyone who knows AWS probably knows this. You shut it down, you start it back up, it'll be moved to hardware that doesn't have an issue and you can avoid that. But what if you didn't get that email? You know, what if that email was buried down in your inbox? And the problem is that Amazon makes this a best practice, but the issue there, I know this is a side topic, so I'll try to keep it shorter. The issue is that not every application can behave in that model. So if you have an auto-scaling situation where you have like one server, and then if the load picks up, it's going to add another and another and another, and when the load dies down, it's going to start deleting servers. And each one server can go away and it's no problem because it'll just like auto-heal and bring up another one. Yeah. That's great. But some applications just don't know how to handle that. You have to basically hack and rewire things to make it work. It's just so convoluted. But I think that's part of the reason why we have this mentality. But to get it back to this subject a little bit closer here, I think like it's a really great thing if you have your automation at your company in such a way that you could delete a server and you could just run your Ansible or your Chef or your Puppet scripts and it just rebuilds everything. And you could have your packages in there as variables. So if it's a different package name on CentOS versus on the Linux, you can just make it a variable. And that's all well and good. But the reality of the situation, unfortunately, is quite a few companies, if not the majority, set up their infrastructure before the automation movement. And to go back and redo all that is really hard. So for them, it's difficult to move from one distribution to another because they don't have it automated. And now they have a tool like Elevate that can go in there and try to remove some of that burden from them and maybe even get them their weekends back.
Yeah, that's the hope. to help people essentially save time and also make sure that they're not running into any risks of security issues, which is another, you know, big reason for migrating. And, you know, we've seen so far, I mean, you know, we announced the project a couple of weeks ago and a lot of people showed up that had, you know, fleets of servers. I'm talking about hundreds of servers. And, you know, for them, the security component was very important because they want to make sure that, you know, when the time comes and they need to move, that they're able to move all that stuff because it's not feasible for them to reprovision everything from scratch, whether that's because, you know, they're not set up for automation or whether those fleets of servers are shared amongst customers. And, you know, you just can't take your customers down, to reinstall the OS, and then reprovisioning basically requires you to have a whole nother set of hardware that you can bring up the new stuff on before you take the old stuff down, so that you have somewhere to migrate everyone to in the interim. So,
just tell your customers to hold their horses a bit and they'll come back anyway.
Right. The service will be down this weekend due to migration.
Imagine if Amazon pulled that.
Oh, gosh, that would be something. You know, it's amazing how much truth you speak here because as someone who's been working in the industry for like, 20 years or something, I lost count now. I mean, this was life. This is how it works. Yeah. We worry about this stuff. We get anxious thinking about these huge projects and how much of our personal time is going to be wasted, not wasted, but, you know, used up by this. And this is a really big deal. Now, another thing to keep in mind, too, is that CentOS 7 is supported for a while longer. Yeah. CentOS 8 is not. And we were talking off camera before we started that it's kind of ironic that this is the one time where the people that procrastinated, you know, didn't move to CentOS 8 are probably happy that they didn't move to CentOS 8. But even better, distributions like Alma Linux 8, Rocky Linux 8, Oracle 8, those are 8 series, you know, of the family. but you can move to 8 now. That's the takeaway here. You don't have to stay on 7 forever. Before, the only option was to go from 7 or CentOS 7 to CentOS 8. Now you could go from CentOS 7, Alma Linux 8, Rocky Linux 8, you know, Oracle Enterprise Linux. I mean, you have options, and those are supported. So you're able to, I mean, you could move to CentOS 8 if you wanted to, but I think the in my opinion, the big use case here is to go to an 8 version that will be supported and not have to worry about the, you know, pulling the plug on you at the end of the day. So that's going to be a great benefit.
If you're on 7 and you move to CentOS 8, that's a dead end anyway. So you'll have to migrate twice. So
right. you'll have to move twice in the next 2 months.
Yeah.
Yes.
I almost think like we should put like billboard ads up, you know, everywhere to make sure people know you don't move to 8, CentOS 8. You don't have to. There's a better way. Don't do that other upgrade step. Don't step through and, you know, upgrade.
Well, you know, that's actually interesting because there was discussion amongst a few people on the CentOS list on, you know, how do we handle the end of life? Because obviously on the day of, you know, the website will stop advertising it as being available. Mm-hmm. But then what do you do for the people who, you know, on December 25th and 26th, when they're sitting at home and decide, hey, I want to play with something and then download CentOS 8 and then install it. And then, you know, 2, 3 days, 4 days later, they're not getting any security updates anymore. So, right. That's part of this too. And It's actually, you know, I mean, we had to reward the procrastinators, Jay. So
I wonder if the situation will ever happen again where you know, that'll be the case that people that did not upgrade in a timely fashion are like, yes, I made the right decision. I don't know if that'll ever happen again.
If your parents told you crime doesn't pay, this is a shining example of just how wrong they were.
So what's stopping this then, this tool with the metadata and the service that it has, from one day supporting Debian? But that is that way too off kilter for this, or is that maybe a possibility of the community put enough work into it that it could actually be Debian to Alma Linux or Alma Linux to Ubuntu? Or is that even a possibility?
I believe in the power of community, and if they wanted to do it, I'm sure we can probably figure something out, but I mean, it's kind of out of scope for it right now, only because that would require a massive re-architecting of sort of the core, really the core architecture of how the Leap tool works. And, you know, if there were a group of people that came along and decided that, hey, we're going to do it, then I'm sure we would support it. I wouldn't try to hold anyone back from doing it. But whether someone is crazy enough and has enough time on their hands to do is a different story. But hey, you know, if you're up for it, come see me. We'll try to make it happen.
Well, Debian might be a completely different architecture, and everything might be differently named and all that. But there are other distributions that ran into a dead end, for example, Scientific Linux, and there are still users locked there and they don't have a pass forward. So that might be a good candidate for this tool.
Yeah,
that's a good point. Absolutely.
Yeah. And we've reached out to a few people in the scientific community to see if there was, you know, number one, any interest in the tool, and number two, any interest in collaborating to make sure that you know, scientific gets support there.
Yeah.
I don't recall. Was there a 8 version of Scientific Linux? Did that come out?
There was not. No, there was not.
So it was before that would have happened then, I guess.
Yeah.
Yep.
And that's probably why they didn't step forward as an alternative when CentOS 8 changes were announced and they left the playfield open. Because, again, they already had the distribution. They might have just stepped forward like Alma Linux and Rocky did and Oracle. But they never did, and no one from the team did. But they are still delivering patches for the version that there is out there, version 7.
Yeah, they still support 7 because they have, you know, experiments that are still running on 7, you know, LHC and stuff like that. So, I mean, 7 is still supported. I think they also recently were doing a lot of due diligence around CentOS Stream. And they, so the tool supports going from 7 to CentOS Stream 8 as well. So if you want to go to Stream, that's supported too. And that's important because I think Stream is going to continue to be, you know, a major, it's going to continue to see a major adoption. And, you know, yeah. And I mean, like it already is, I think. And, you know, certainly the scientific community did a lot of due diligence around, you know, what their solution was. And they were kind of, very, weary of what Stream would look like and how it would work and how it would function and how timely updates would be and stuff like that. And I think, you know, they came back and said that, you know, it looks good to them, which is something that a lot of us were saying, you know, that we don't, the I think the PR, damage around Stream was a lot worse than it needed to be. And, you know, this is, it's something that we want to continue to support because it's something that is going to be a very important part of the ecosystem. And, you know, I think that, places that have done their due diligence and done their homework and kind of followed, the updates and stuff have come to see that, that, you know, it's not as scary as people thought it would be, you know, it does have a short, it does have a shorter life cycle. Which may be a problem for a different reason, but in terms of, you know, the day-to-day kind of, you know, management of the system and just, you know, how things are going to work there, I think people have come to realize that it's not as scary as what they first thought.
I agree with you, actually, One question, you know, I probably should have looked this up before the show, but I noticed at the last minute that there's CentOS Stream 8, there's CentOS Stream 9. And my understanding is that CentOS Stream is a rolling distribution. And when I think of a rolling distribution, I think of it as there's no new version. It just keeps rolling, but there is a new version. There's a CentOS Stream 9. So I think there is some kind of abstraction between 8 and 9 on that level.
Possibly. Yeah, there is. So basically the thing with Stream is that you're just getting the next like minor release sooner than you would have, you know, in the traditional RHEL CentOS model, right? Mm-hmm. So it's not really a rolling release, even though it follows that mentality a little bit, but not exactly. And I think people are starting to realize that hey, this is actually a little bit more beneficial than before because you are getting those like point changes much sooner than you would have in the traditional like CentOS Linux model. And yeah, it's still as of now, it's not the like, so a typical rolling release will be something where there is no like 8 or 9, right? I mean, like 8 or 9 would be just basically some kind of abstraction or demarcation point where the team says like, hey, this is where this starts. This is where this ends, you know, and this is not like that so far. So there's still going to be an 8. There's still going to be a 9 because that's the way the RHEL development lifecycle goes. And now whether this is the beginning of Red Hat experimenting with the rolling release type of architecture is remains to be seen. It may very well be because, you know, people that run rolling release distributions, there's definitely a lot of benefit there. And it's there, you know, and people like those benefits. So this could be the beginning of Red Hat kind of experimenting with what that would look like for Red Hat Enterprise Linux. I guess we'll see in the next, you know, 2-3 years, whether that's true or not.
Yeah. I understand what you're saying there. But there will always be situations where the stability of the platform is what actually people wanted.
And absolutely.
These type of changes are not to their best interest. With the announcement that Red Hat made, I don't, at least from my perspective, and this is just my personal opinion, I'm not pulling any information from anywhere. This is just my take on it. the worst part of the announcement, first it wasn't then, they didn't handle it the best way. I guess we can all agree that they could have done a better job both at communicating the change and give some heads up to the people, some time to prepare and all that. And I don't think the worst part of their announcement was even the change to CentOS Stream. It was actually cutting support for CentOS 8 by 8 years or 9 years just out of the blue. And that's not something that people were very happy with.
So, I agree.
Should have handled that better.
Yeah. And listen, I think that's where distros like Alma Linux still fall in the landscape. I think there's still a tremendous, you know, let's call it appetite for like a long-term, you know, let's call it not rolling release, but if you want to call it lazy release, like you've seen them called distribution. Yeah. And again, I think there's a place for everything. And a lot of it comes down to just what open source is all about. And that's giving users the choice to pick what they feel is best for them. And that's just, you know, this is just another one of those options.
Yep. And I think I know this is not going to be a popular opinion, but it is an opinion of mine. I think rolling is actually a great idea for servers. And I know a lot of people are like, what? But when people think of rolling, I think the elephant in the room is Arch Linux. I think I'm probably not wrong. When I say the word rolling Linux, most people think of Arch or they think of Manjaro, but probably Arch. And, you know, I'm an Arch user, not full time, but I like to use it. And there are some situations where, you know, packages are upgraded, something isn't working and you got to kind of figure it out and fix it. But what I think a lot of people don't understand is that Arch Linux, their mentality is to not alter the packages as much as possible, to keep them as close to upstream as they can. So, for example, if you have a new version of GNOME in Ubuntu, then Ubuntu is going to tweak it. They're going to patch it. They're going to do whatever they need to do to make it work for the desktop. And then Arch Linux is like GNOME. And that you got GNOME now.
Right.
They just give it to you, right? They just give you the package and they're done. It does get tested. I don't mean to say like they don't test it or anything like that, but they don't alter things to fit a certain paradigm because they're trying to keep it simple. So my opinion is that the unstable mentality of rolling is not because rolling is unstable or it has to be unstable. It's just that the way Arch Linux does it, which is not wrong, because they have a clear mission statement of what they're trying to do. They're very clear about what they're trying to do. And there's certain expectations there. But if you have an enterprise distribution, I do think it's going to be a lot harder to make it stable, but not impossible. It depends on how they go about it. How do they compile the packages? How do they handle any disruptive changes that come down the pipe? Those are the things that I think separate rolling from being able to work in enterprise or not. But it remains to be seen if someone's going to take that on and try to find a balance between stability and rolling, which would be a fun challenge if anyone wants to take that on.
Yeah, and I think Red Hat is uniquely positioned to be able to, to do that. So, that's why I think this, you know, the stream thing may be the beginning of them kind of experimenting with rolling releases. That's where kind of that's how that opinion was formed. I agree with you.
I think that will be tested the day that they introduce a change that breaks a module in Apache and breaks some web servers or some services somewhere, just because one of the rolling changes was actually, I don't want to say faulty because it doesn't have to be faulty, but the new behavior is not compatible with what you had before and the code that was running there before. Yeah. So you're going to introduce a breaking change and it's going to be like the Java release notes where somewhere around those 20,000 new lines of change log, there is something, and now you can't use variables like this. You have to do it some other way.
Right.
And no one notices that before they deploy the new version and now something broke and you have to waste your time trying to fix it.
Yep.
And I think Red Hat is going to have their trial the day that they introduce one of those changes. And the thing with the older model was that you could be confident that would not be the case. You had something that would be stable for quite some time, and you wouldn't have to worry about that. If you have changes every single day or every other week or something like that, that's going to mean that CIS admins will have more work to do in their hands.
Right.
Yeah. Well, that's definitely true as well. I think that is the challenge, right? We need to try to figure out a balance between the two. And yeah, that absolutely happens. I've even seen it on non-rolling distributions, not nearly as often, but it's like you have to fix something, but it's so true because you have this thing that happens, you have to address it, and you have like a million messages scrolling through your terminal, and it's like, are you going to read each one? I mean, I don't. Right. Like, does anybody?
Right.
So
you're going to trust that they know what they're doing.
So in terms of Elevate, like how long did it take for something? Because we're talking about all these abstractions between distributions. How long did it really take for this to come together?
It took a while. I would say probably close to, 3 months of work, let's say.
Wow.
A big part of it was also interacting with the current Leap team at Red Hat, making sure that kind of, you know, things were, number one, going to stay stable in terms of how the tool is architected now. So that was a big part of it. Number two was finding out if they, so we like to work upstream. We don't want to maintain a fork of something. It doesn't help us. It doesn't help the community. It doesn't help anyone else for there to be multiple versions of, you know, some kind of like a Chimera tool that that we cobbled together. So we also wanted to make sure that, the maintainers there were open to us patching it to do what we wanted it to do. Mm-hmm. So there was some discussion about that on their IRC channel as well, kind of back and forth. And then there was actually putting the work together. The issue was also around the metadata set, that there was no like freely available metadata set. So we started cobbling that together. And then we also found out that someone at Oracle was working on something similar. And so we kind of teamed up around that and actually hat tip to Oracle for the nice contribution there, because they provided a lot of the initial metadata set. And they went through and did a lot of work to put it together. There was significant engineering effort there. So also on our end of trying to figure out, you know, the whole package evolution service thing, because we wanted to make it something that was useful to the community, and just basically dumping like a blob of metadata to people isn't really going to help us in the long term. And then we came up with the concept of, well, you know, let's turn this into a service where anyone can contribute metadata, anyone can extract like a subset of the metadata, and then also specifically anyone that's maintaining something, you know, let's say a Cisco, an NVIDIA, or whoever it is, and they want to make sure that their stuff is supported for anyone doing a migration, they can come in and be part of that process as well. So it was kind of the work on all of that, plus thinking about how we can re-architect this to be a collaborative project and putting tooling together that works for everyone, and then going ahead and testing it, right? Because we didn't want to just throw it out there and say, hey, you know, this is like super alpha and play with it, because people are going to play with it and destroy stuff, and we didn't want that to happen. So, there was definitely a lot of QA work done there. I spent more than a few days playing with stuff, trying to just kind of, you know, make sure the ins and outs were all there. And listen, is it a perfect process? No, it's not a perfect process. Every system is different. You know, every system is configured differently. Every system is set up differently. Every system has its own applications and its own needs. And you know, it's this sounds like very lovey-dovey, but every system is unique, Jay. And so everyone needs to make sure that they, are taking precautions when doing something like this. But at the same time, that's part of the greatness of this, is that we can continue to tweak it to make sure that all those scenarios are covered, right? I certainly, even if I take like a stock CentOS box and just put an applicant, you know, change some configuration on it, and I ask you to do the same thing, odds are we're both going to do it in two different ways, you know? And yes. So now how do we make sure that when I migrate mine and you migrate yours, that both of them will be migrated safely? And we have people that have come into our chat and, you know, brought up different things and said, hey, I found this or I tried this and it didn't work. And what can I say? You know, we're just we're rolling along and trying to improve it as time goes on. And that's the beauty of it, right, is that we made it so that that's possible.
And in 3 months, that's just amazing. And the whole chaotic nature of these migrations, I mean, I remember when I was younger watching Jurassic Park when it first came out, and there's a scene where Ian Malcolm drops a drop of water on Ellie's hand, and it goes off one direction, drops another water, it goes off the different direction. Yeah. I didn't know that that scene was going to define my career, because that is like the trigger to my career. It's always like that, right?
It is serious work.
It is really like that. But there's two things I really love about, actually three things I love about this tool. I mean, obviously I love the fact that it's making this easy on people, but what I love the most, number one, is a community mindset, because, you know, other people out there might not help the other distribution. And I think the message you're sending is clear. This is Alma Linux, your Oracle Linux. We're going to help you out. We're going to team up. We're going to work together and solve this problem together. We're not competing with you. We're just going to do what we do. We love software. We love open source. We're going to get this done. We're going to work together, build this community. That's sending a powerful message out there that I think is very important. But the other message I feel like this is sending is that, as I was talking about earlier, it's so common administrators have this mindset where that's just the way it is. This is a hard process. There's no other way to fix it. We just got to spend these days migrating. We have to spend these days doing X, doing Y. And I think all too often people just accept that this is challenging and it's always going to be challenging. And they don't think about it like, could I figure out a way to make this easy for everyone? Could I figure out a way to make this not a pain in the butt? You know, and I feel like that message is super important, because this whole project, making this thing easier on people, could, like, you know, influence someone else that is grumbling about a completely unrelated process. Wow, they solved that problem. Maybe I should try to solve this problem too. Right. And then maybe someday this will lead to like this renaissance where things aren't as, you know, much of a pain as they used to be. I can only dream.
You get a pretty bleak outlook on the whole job after a few years, and you think that this is never going to change. Things will always be like this, and it's probably one of the reasons why we're still rebooting for patches, and why you still have to struggle selecting your audio sources when you want to start recording.
It's these types of
annoyances that we can't seem to get rid of, that should have been swept away a long time ago.
Yeah,
I totally agree. Yeah,
yeah, I that was part of the you know, those are two of the, I guess, biggest philosophies that we kind of subscribe to for Alma Linux. The project is number one, the community and collaboration aspect. I think, you know, that we want to create a community that is very open, that is very welcoming, that is very inclusive, that, you know, that we try to think of how to tear boundaries down, not how to put them up.
Right.
And that's, you know, that's, I think that a lot of times we kind of forget that by nature of, you know, the work we do and kind of the history of the whole open source movement, right? And sometimes we just kind of like lose sight of the human element of it.
Right.
And so this is both the human element and the technical element of it, which is, you know, that just kind of, how can we make this something that's useful for everyone at large? How can we get the most possible people involved? How can we make this a place where, you know, anyone can come and kind of work and learn and grow? So that's definitely part of our philosophy. And the second part of the philosophy is also, you know, just trying to help shift the paradigm and creative problem solving. You know, I think the one excellent thing that came out of Red Hat's announcement is that there's been a lot of there's like been an infusion of really awesome people into the Enterprise Linux community now, whether it's in our community, whether it's in the other communities. But a lot of people that were not kind of involved before have now suddenly become involved and have become engaged. And that's very, very important. And I think that's, you know, that's the key ingredient for any ecosystem, let alone ours. And I'm just glad to see that happening. And, you know, part of what we kind of want to try to support is now that there are more people here and now that, you know, Red Hat essentially shifted the paradigm. So how can we keep shifting the paradigm ourselves? Like, what else can we do for the community, right? Not just for Red Hat, but for the community at large that can, you know, maybe do some interesting things, solve some interesting problems, take things in different directions, maybe experiment a little bit. Now, I'm not going to say all of the experiments are going to be successes. I'm sure we're going to have our failures too, but you know, we're going to learn from them and we're going to keep going. And I think that's what we're all about. That was kind of like the driving soul behind why we wanted to put the Elevate project together. And I think that, you know, so far the reception has been awesome, and it showed us that, you know, we're definitely on the right trajectory, and we have the right philosophy. You know, when we were talking about it with a lot of people early on, a lot of people just basically said, like, you're nuts. You know, like, that's walled garden. Leave it to the walled garden. Let them take care of it. Like, there's no, don't muck with these things. You know, and since then, like, it's just been such an awesome reception of people saying, like, wow, you know, like, this is great. It's great that this is open to everybody. It's great that this is something that's useful and that's trying to draw people in too. And that's trying to solve, like, real world problems. You know, people have thousands of servers, and, you know, re-imaging thousands of servers is just not a possibility. But if we can put together a tool where they can run, you know, on the first, let's say, 5 servers and figure out what the issues are, but then they can fix those issues, and then they can run through the other, you know, 995 and just get them, you know, migrated. It's a tremendously helpful thing for someone in that situation. And I think it's tremendously helpful to everyone in general because of the security aspect, which is something that, you know, is not lost on us too, is that, you know, distributions do go end of life. And if you're not up to date, and if you fall out of compliance, and if you have security holes, you know, hackers are out there looking for stuff to exploit, and they're going to find it. Whatever our tiny contribution can be to mitigating that is something that we feel is very important to contribute.
Yeah, and I'm going to do my shameless plug right now. Just because the system goes end of life doesn't mean that the hackers go end of life as well. They will keep looking for ways to break in. So if you're going to be stuck with CentOS 8 past December 31st, take a look at TechScare's end of life service. We will keep you supported. We will keep providing you with security updates until you make up your mind and find out to which distro you want to migrate to. And that ends the shameless plug. Apologies for that.
I think it's great. I mean, that's really going to help a lot of people, because that's a big pain point. And, you know, as much as I love working in IT, and I so love it, it's hard sometimes because you do have these challenges that you have to face, but you feel so good after you win, right? You have this really horrible, impossible situation. And just like you were saying, you know, people might say, well, you're crazy for trying to take this on. Was there ever any really good invention that didn't start with people saying that? So I can't think of any.
Yeah, probably not.
Yep. So there you go. I think that's great. I wish you the best. I can't wait to see what's next and how this evolves and how your impact on the community, well, impacts the community. That's, it's just so many great things I'm hearing. And I do agree, you're going in the right direction. Just keep going in that direction as you already are. And, I'm going to keep my eyes on everything and just see what you guys are up to.
Yeah. And I'll put a call out there to anyone that's watching or listening. If you want to be a part of it, we definitely would love to have you, and we need you. So, you know, if this is something that you're interested in, solving problems, making life easier, learning, growing, figuring things out, and just working with other like awesome people. I think our community now, it's just the people in there are awesome. I mean, I don't have another word to describe. Just, you know, they're just awesome. And, you know, if this is something that you're interested in, we'd love to have your eyes on it, and we'd love to, you know, help figure out whatever needs are pressing to you and help you become a contributor. If you'd love to contribute, you know, the best and kind of least friction would be to just chat.almalinux.org. It'll drop you into the main channel and just introduce yourself, say hi, and then we can go from there.
Awesome. I hope everyone does that. That's a great idea to get involved and, you know, if nothing else, just have a discussion, you know, just get to know people in the community and understand what they're working on and, you know, just network. And when you find your niche or something that you want to work on, you can definitely dive in and help out with that. I want to stress, you don't have to be a developer for this. You don't have to be a developer because you can be working on documentation, testing, because sometimes I go into chat rooms for distributions and there's a call for people to test the ISO images. Can you throw this on a VM for me and let me know if it boots or something as simple as that? So there's definitely a lot of great ways to help out.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, you don't have to be a developer. If by chance you're listening to this and you're not a developer and want to become a developer, you know, we're all for helping people via mentoring and things like that. So if you want to gain experience in something and just need, you know, a place to play, come on down.
Sounds fun.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much.
If it wasn't fun, we wouldn't be doing it.
That's true. That is so true. There's so much passion in the community. I think that's what drives it.
Yep.
Absolutely. All right. Well, I really appreciate you coming on. And Zhao, as always, it's always a pleasure to chat with you. And this was a fun episode.
Yes, it was. Thanks for having me again, Jake. Thanks, Jack.
Thanks for having me too. Yeah. Thank you so much.
All right. See you guys next time.
Bye.